Shove that up there, I'm already.
Systems engineer.
Did you take? Hello.
Or candlestick maker.
Dr. Gilruth, the director of this center, would like to make a statement.
Well, gentlemen, the occasion, of course, is the naming of the first Apollo flight crew. Now, the crewmen will be Lieutenant Colonel Virgil Gus Grissom, Lieutenant Colonel Edward H. White, and Lieutenant Roger B. Chaffee. Now, I think you all know all these gentlemen. I'm not going to identify the rest of the people here on the stage, at the moment anyway. Of course, Gus Grissom made the second flight in the Mercury program. That was MR-4 back in July of 61, I believe it was. And he was the first of the astronauts to make two space flights, being the command pilot and the first Gemini crew, Gemini number 3. And now he will be the commander of the first Apollo flight mission. And I think that must be obvious to everyone that early in these programs, it's very important to have our coolest and oldest heads in the business.
Oldest.
And, I mean old only in the point of experience, Gus. Of course, you know Ed White. He's become a pretty famous man in the last year, and I believe this will be Roger Chaffee's first space flight, and of course we wish all these men extremely well. The backups, or the backup crew, would be Lieutenant Colonel James McDivitt, Major David Scott, who is at the center right now but is not able to be here, and Mr. Russell L. Schweikert of NASA. The far end of the table, as you may have guessed by now, is Joe Shea, the manager of the Apollo program. I think it would be appropriate at this time maybe to ask Gus for a few words.
Well, I didn't know I was going to have to say anything today. I'm real pleased to be on the first flight and looking forward to it. I've just now started getting into the Apollo systems and looking at Apollo spacecraft and trying to forget everything I knew about Gemini. I think we've got a real good crew with Ed and Roger, and then with Jim and Rusty and Dave Scott backing us up. Well, I think we've got a good crew. We'll have a good flight. Anybody else cares anything?
Speak, Ed.
No, I'm quite pleased to be named on the first Apollo flight. As you might know, when we came in here, we were assigned and worked primarily in the Apollo area until we were fortunate enough to get pulled off and get to fly Gemini. And it's nice to be back in working in Apollo. We are working in the systems right now, getting up to speed, and I think we'll all be looking forward to the flight.
Roger?
I've been working in the Apollo system since I joined NASA about 2 years ago, and needless to say, I'm extremely excited about being named to this flight crew, and I think I've got a couple of the greatest men in the world to work with. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Joe, would you look?
No, I don't have much to say. It's just kind of a
pleasure to finally get some men in the manned space part of Apollo. This unmanned part of the program has been going on a little bit too long. I got one minor bone to pick with Gus. Since Apollo is derived very heavily from Mercury and Gemini, and we rely extremely much on that experience, I don't really want him to forget what he's learned in Gemini, but rather to bring it with him, and I suspect that's really what he's going to do.
I'm only going to forget the bad things.
You keep telling me there weren't any. I think it's a great crew. I think that that Gus has shown he's a good commander, and I look forward to the whole Apollo team working with these guys and beginning what I hope will be a long and successful Apollo flight schedule.
Joe, I'm sure they'd appreciate some indication of the extent of the experiments to be carried in the first flight or any particular maneuver. Seeing Ed White here might raise questions about EVA.
No, we, for Ed's benefit, the hatch will be firmly closed in the Apollo. We don't open the hatch until Block 2. The mission itself is something a little different for a first manned flight than we've done before. The mission is, there are two missions like this in the Block 1 part of the program. The prime purpose of the mission is to really exercise the spacecraft and the crews in Earth orbit. So you recognize that we will have had only two relatively short flights, the one that we had last month and the upcoming flight 202 that will be sometime this summer. The first mission, however, rather than restricting it to any arbitrary number of orbits before the mission starts, will be what we would call an open-ended mission. The intent is to make, in effect, a series of decisions for the first six orbits, essentially a decision each orbit that the spacecraft is operating properly and is therefore go. I think you're aware after about six orbits, there's a fairly major commitment then, hopefully for a long period of time. And we would then, after about the first six orbits, expect to make go decisions roughly once a day. The intent is to exercise the systems as long as they keep operating properly, recognizing that on a first flight like this, some problems might come up, and that's really why we're flying the flight. Everything working properly, we might go 12 to 14 days in the limit on the mission. As far as the experiments are concerned, they'll be primarily medical experiments on the first mission. I think there are some 10 total. Most of these have been done in the Gemini program, and these are repeats of them because this would be, if it went all the way, one of the longer missions that we've run.
I'd just like to make quite clear that this first manned flight will not necessarily be on number 204. It could be very well be on 204, but it only will be if the intervening events are such that we are able to do that.
That's right.
All right, gentlemen, do you have questions? Ben?
Did we have Lieutenant Chaffee's title?
Navy Lieutenant.
Yeah, oh, pilot, I'm sorry. Command pilot, pilot. Oh. And
well, I was. Communications, Gus. Yes, if possible.
Well, we really haven't come up with the name for the positions yet. I think tentatively we've sort of looked at it as being a command pilot, senior pilot, and pilot role, but we haven't officially designated the positions at this time.
John.
Any indication when this flight will take place?
First quarter.
It's presently scheduled for the first quarter of 67. Assuming it's on 204.
Well, which one is the navigator, the senior pilot or the pilot?
I think the reason why we haven't designated any person as the navigator or a systems engineer, as we have somewhat in the past worked along these lines, is that it's really a three-man operation, and there won't be any one person doing the navigation nor any one person doing strictly the systems. They'll have people that will be up for a period of time while one of the crew members will be sleeping. So you can see that you obviously can't have somebody sitting in the commander's seat, the same man the whole flight. It'll be swapping around. So there'll be a navigator, and he'll be all three men. All three men will be fully qualified navigators, systems engineers.
Saying that you'll be cross-trained to be able to step into anybody's or sit into anybody's seat.
That's right. That's the only way you can do it, when you have to realize one man has to be down sleeping for some of the period of time when two men are up, roughly a 6 to 8 hour period.
Thank you.
Will there be any rendezvous practice on this mission?
No rendezvous planned on this one at this time.
Unlike Gemini, therefore, one of the crew members will be awake at all times.
We plan to have one crew member awake all the time.
I realize that this isn't a flight to the moon, but if it were, which two men would go down to the surface of the moon? Which two men would go into the LEM?
I'm not sure this has been resolved at this time.
I don't think the planning office.
If it was this crew, I would be me and somebody else.
Very good.
Are they all medical experiments, Dr. Shea? Are you having any scientific and engineering type?
Let's see. There are two
scientific experiments on board, photographing weather and the land masses, and I believe there's one other technical one.
The nephelometer.
Nephelometer, that's right.
Oh, that's for the inside of the spacecraft. That's right.
The rest of them are medical.
What is that? I can't even pronounce it. What is it?
It measures nephels.
That essentially measures the dust particles in the spacecraft.
Nephel is a Greek word for clouds or something like that. And it measures the dustiness or the opacity of the atmosphere in the cabin.
The turbidity.
Turbidity is the right. Rusty. Nice to have smart guys on the crease.
At last.
I can predict right now that most of the jokes will come about the nephelometer.
Is your planning far enough advanced that you know how high up you'll be on this flight?
Yeah, the initial injection is in orbit 85 perigee by about 130. It'll be circularized. Then there are a number of burns, 7 or 8 on the service module engine, since that's one of the major things that we're checking out. And we may get up to as high as 200, 235 miles thereabouts.
That's right.
Yeah.
Since Mr. Shea has indicated that he realizes that some problems might occur on an open-ended flight, will the recovery forces be more extensive in the Apollo program than they have been in Gemini?
No, I don't think so. We would plan to use the same recovery areas. My impression is they've worked out pretty well, even in somewhat emergency situations.
Dr. Shea, could you give us a rundown then on the flight plan for that mission? What will be primarily important on the first manned mission, and secondary objectives and things like that?
I'd prefer not to do it in nauseating detail. Basically, the primary things we're doing is literally engineering experimentation on the spacecraft. That's one reason why the number of other experiments are so small. We want to do a number of burns on the service module engine of various degrees, see how it operates after it's been soaked in space, reached equilibrium cold temperatures, see what minimum impulse we can get out of it, because we have to trade off between the reaction control system and the service module engine and some of the lunar parts of the mission. We'll be doing using the guidance and navigation system, which, as you know, contains both a scanning telescope and a sextant, and we'll be seeing how well we can determine from Earth orbit the trajectory of the spacecraft. Also seeing from low Earth orbital altitudes how well we can shoot stars with things like the sextant, and by and large working out the accuracies, if you will, of the guidance and navigation system. In most of the other systems, we will have on board the S-band communication system. It will be backed up with a VHF communication system of the kind that we have been using. And this will be the first flight of the S-band. We'll be qualifying it for follow-on missions, both Earth orbital and lunar. And I think you know on the follow-on Apollo missions, we will use for almost all the communications at lunar ranges what we call the unified S-band equipment, which provides not just communications, but also the tracking necessary for determining orbits from the ground. In the area of the thermal control system, we have a number of problems that we are interested in, primarily involved in the behavior of the spacecraft under various thermal conditions, how effective the radiators are, under what conditions we wind up boiling water, and we'll be putting the spacecraft into a series of fixed attitudes for fixed periods of time under various power loads in order to observe the radiator and overall thermal efficiency of the system. The other subsystems, stabilization and control, there are a number of modes of operation and stabilization and control. We'll be playing with those in order to determine how effective they are in the space operations itself. Setting up various of the inline nominal and emergency situations for all of the systems. We have a large number of redundant systems on the spacecraft, and we want to exercise them in essentially most of the permutations and combinations we'd expect to see on the lunar flights. That will take a fair part of the time. By and large, then a very detailed exercising of the spacecraft systems in order to be sure that things operate as they have been designed. In certain instances, getting some on-orbit design information, which we'll use for the Block 2 and later spacecraft flights.
How about the reentry speeds? What reentry patterns are you looking towards? Speeds?
No, we're just becoming in normal Earth orbit reentry conditions. This will not be anything like we've been doing on 201 or 202.
Will there be a real-time TV?
I believe there will be real-time TV. Well, excuse me, there will be TV available from the spacecraft. How it works into real-time, I will not commit to at this point in time.
We have a switch.
There might be an embarrassing moment or two.
That's a cool producer in this guy.
Yeah.
Has a decision been made, Joe, on what suits the crew will wear?
Yeah, we're using the Gemini suit. I forget the exact model number or cut, but it. No, it's not the lightweight suit.
Standard Gemini suit.
It's called the A1C, and it's not. It's the basically the G4C with a few minor modifications, such as the position is a stand-up position in it primarily, and there's a modification there so you can stand up more comfortably. The shoulders are a little bit more designed for optimum mobility. Basically, it's a G4C suit.
67. Dr. Gilruth, would you absolutely rule out the possibility of this flight this year?
Oh, I wouldn't like to say any more than that. If it goes on 204, it's scheduled for the first quarter next year. I wouldn't like to be categoric about anything these days.
I have a question on the orbital parameters. Will you be launching on the same azimuth heading and using the same tracking stations, and when will you change over, et cetera?
I believe we are launching on essentially the same orbits, and it'll look pretty much like a Gemini flight from the flight control point of view, except for the new systems involved and the different telemetry formats and so on. Somewhat larger delta V on board the spacecraft.
When will your tracking station, the three tracking stations that will be able to follow the trajectory all the way to the moon, when will they come into commission?
Oh, they will gradually come into commission during this year and next year, but recognize they're only for deep space operations. What we've done is outfit most of the existing manned spaceflight stations that have been used in Mercury and Gemini with S-band equipment, and they're used primarily for the Earth orbital part of the operation. It's only when you get out to ranges of 10,000 miles or more that you're far enough away to come back to use just the three stations located around the Earth.
I assume you'll be spending the rest of the year strictly on Apollo. What are going to be some of the first things you're going to be doing in your training?
Well, the training will go pretty much as it did in Gemini. We'll spend a great deal of time with the spacecraft. And then as our Apollo mission simulator comes into being, why, of course, we'll do the major portion of our training there.
When do you expect to have the simulator ready?
I don't know the new date, but it should be within a month, 6 weeks, I think, starting to work. First part of May.
Be very little difference in training for this Apollo flight than training for the Gemini flight, except different equipment.
Different equipment, right.
Perhaps on the first flight will be a little more emphasis on systems review. And the systems are a little more complex, so it's going to take a little more time to do them. Learn them. This is what we've been doing today, as a matter of fact. We were in a briefing on the service propulsion system and the command module RCS system all day.
Steve, go ahead, Art.
Let me ask two questions. The first one is when, Gus, did you and White and Chaffee know of your selection yourselves? And the second question is the planning date also within the third quarter, or first quarter of 67, or is the planning date earlier? I assume you have a planning date you're working toward.
Well, officially, we found out about it today. You can't feel comfortable about it until everybody's been told. And I don't think I understood the second part of your question.
Well, let's go back to the first question, and I'll ask you unofficially when you knew about it.
Well, I don't know when it was.
Some time ago,
I don't know.
A month, maybe?
I really don't know. I don't know if it was a month or 6 weeks ago when it was. But I've known about it for a while, all of us have.
Okay, now what about the planning date? Is it within the first quarter 67, or is it some other time, such as earlier?
The planning date for the launch?
For the launch, yes.
First quarter of 67.
There is a date within the first quarter 67 that has been given to you as the planning date for the...
As far as I'm concerned, launch date is when all of it gets ready to go on a date that's on a schedule. Doesn't mean anything to me.
Well, I'm not asking whether it means anything to you now. I'm just asking you whether it...
Well, I'm telling you that it doesn't mean enough to me for me to go look it up and see what it is.
Well, to be precise, there is not a date set because on a first mission like this, there are a number of things that have to fall into place from the delivery and checkout of the spacecraft through the training of the crews. And this far away from the possible flight, we can't set a date, so we don't bother even to write it down on paper. So Gus couldn't find it if he wanted to look it up. So the flight will come sometime in the first quarter of 67 or when everything is ready.
Mr. Shea, where is the Apollo and where is the Saturn for the 204 at this time?
Well, let's see. The Apollo, I know. It's in North American Downey plant. The command module is in what we call pressure test at the present time, and a pressure cell. The service module is in a building we call 290, which is the main checkout building, getting some tanks changed before it goes into pressure test. I presume that the 204 first stage is down at Michoud someplace getting built, and that the second stage, the S-4B, is somewhere in a Douglas plant or up at SACTO getting either built or checked out.
Steve. Dr. Gilruth, I noticed that you've not yet named a crew for Gemini 12. Is there a chance that Gemini 12 will not fly, that you'll go right into the Apollo program in Gemini, or Gemini 11?
No, I think not. I think there's every expectation of flying Gemini 12.
Pete Baldwin right here.
How would the gross weight of the first spacecraft, the 204 spacecraft, compare with the first lunar mission spacecraft, with the entire spacecraft, including the service module?
We usually break gross weight down in two parts. If you talk about the dry weight, which would be the weight of the command module with everything in it, including its reaction control system, propellants, and life support, and that sort of junk, and the service module without any propellants in it, because that's the big variable part in the service module, then the gross weights are roughly the same, within a few hundred pounds of what we'd expect for the lunar operation. The vehicle will carry in the service module probably 12,000 to 13,000 pounds of fuel, perhaps a little bit more, compared to around 38,000 pounds of fuel, which would be the nominal load for a lunar mission. Okay, so the all-up weight of the spacecraft then on top of the S-1B is something around 34,000 to 35,000 pounds. The actual weights will be determined later on when we refine our calculations on both the S-4B performance and how much we actually weigh as we put ourselves on the scales.
Dr. Gilruth, has a proposal been made to possibly scrub Gemini 12? And if so, has a final decision yet been made on that?
To my knowledge, no proposal, such proposal has been made, and there's every expectation of flying Gemini 12.
Proposals then, are there any plans, and I mean loose plans, perhaps considerations to rendezvous 12 with the 204?
There's been some studying of these possibilities, but there are no plans this time for doing that.
What would be the purpose? Just a rendezvous exercise?
Well, there are many purposes. It's always nice to have somebody able to take a look at you in space to see how you look, if you've come through the launch without any scars and this sort of thing. There are some reasons why project people on Apollo would like to have Gemini pilots be able to station keep with them and look them over. Now, whether or not this proves to be feasible is certainly is not in the plans at this time. All I'm saying is there's been some studying and discussion of this, as we study and discuss many, many things in these programs.
Along that same line, is this studying and consideration still underway?
I couldn't answer that question, really, because there are many people working on these programs, and of course, they study many things, and I don't know all the things they study every day. Maybe Dr. Shea has some comments on this. He's a little closer to it than I am.
There's still a lot of people studying under me, too, though. The studying is still going on. It is much too early to say whether we decide we really need to do it or not.
Gentlemen, why don't we take about a five-minute break? These gentlemen have to go back. I know Dr. Gilruth was pulled out of a meeting. Then we'll resume the normal briefing. We have some other material to cover. Thank you. Well, no. Howard, do we have prints of the quick look?
Yeah, we're going to run it first.
No, do we have release prints of it? Did you ask her? Yeah, I just wondered about a release print. All I want is a quick look. I'm sure they get prints over there.
Are you going into anything else here concerning evaluation, travel reports, and so forth?
No, we got a little bit more on the Agena and so forth. Briefings are important.
What?
These briefings are important.
Oh, I know. Is there going to be, you think, any more technical data coming out this week?
Yeah, Thursday we're going to have some.
Thursday?
A little bit more, yeah.
Not till Thursday?
No.
I think Thursday we'll about wrap it up.
No, Saturday we'll have the...
Well, I know. But Saturday we'll have the crew.
Yeah, we'll wrap it up.
But I mean, technical data on Thursday...
I think, I hope that we'll have something supplemental for Saturday. If you can hear us upstairs, we'd like to resume, please. Largely for the record, I know you have the release, but there are some other points tuned in that don't have the release. Assigned as prime crewman for the Hegemony 11 mission, scheduled in the last quarter of this year, Navy Commander Charles Pete Conrad, Jr., command pilot, Navy Lieutenant Commander Richard F. Gordon, Jr., pilot. Backups will be Mr. Neil A. Armstrong, command pilot, and Air Force Captain William A. Anders as pilot. The backup crewman for the Gemini 10 flight, Navy Captain James A. Lovell, Jr., and Air Force Captain Major Edwin E. Buzz Aldrin, Jr., have been reassigned as backup crewmen for the Gemini 9 mission. The original Gemini 9 backups, Lieutenant Colonel Thomas P. Stafford and Navy Lieutenant Commander Eugene A. Cernan, became prime crewman for that mission after the deaths of Mr. Elliot M. C. Jr. and Major Charles A. Bassett II on February 28th. Replacing Lovell and Aldrin as the backup crew for Gemini 10 are Navy Lieutenant Commander Alan L. Bean and Marine Major Clifton C. Williams, Jr. We also have additional information on the Gemini 11 mission. As presently planned, Gemini 11 will be a rendezvous and docking flight of up to 3 days' duration. Rendezvous is scheduled for the first revolution with the flight crew using onboard systems to compute their own trajectories and maneuvers. Ground systems will be used as a backup mode. Plans call for the spacecraft to re-rendezvous with the Gemini 11 Agena vehicle, which procedurally will be a passive target the second time. The re-rendezvous also will be accomplished with the use of onboard systems. Extravehicular activity is planned using a handheld maneuvering unit similar to the one which would have been used on Gemini 8. Duration of EVA and tasks to be performed will be based on experience in Gemini 9 and Gemini 10. Approximately 8 experiments are tentatively scheduled for Gemini 11. All of them will be repeats of experiments flown previously, but a list of specific experiments will not be available until a reevaluation is completed. The Gemini 11 Agena will be parked in a high orbit for possible use during Gemini 12. The launch profile and orbital parameters will be essentially the same in Gemini 11 as those in Gemini 8. The Agena will be launched into a 185 statute mile orbit, and rendezvous will be accomplished at that altitude. On the Gemini 8 crew, of course, they returned this morning. They went home for lunch and returned to the center at about 2 p.m. Central Standard Time. They are going to work this afternoon on their pilot reports. Tomorrow they will spend the bulk of the day with the Gemini 9 and 10 crews. Also the Gemini 11 crew. On Wednesday, we plan a full-scale management debriefing wherein the project officials here in Houston, some from the Cape and from Washington, will come in to discuss the flight with the two crew members. They will spend the balance of the day working on their pilot report. On Thursday, they will undergo a detailed review of the systems performance of the Gemini 8 spacecraft, which is likely to take all of the day and perhaps go into Friday. On Friday, the principal item scheduled is scientific discussion of the scientific experiments aboard and the other experiments. The press conference with the two astronauts is scheduled for 10 a.m. next Saturday morning. Now, each night, we are going to try to follow the same practice used after the 6 and 7 missions. The pilots will go home for the evening. We do respectfully request your indulgence and the same cooperation that we got during the 6 and 7 post-flight periods, and understand that the news lid is on until Saturday morning, and please let them go to their homes and return in peace. Later this week, the Gemini Launch Vehicle 9 is to be erected at the Cape. We don't know precisely which day, maybe Thursday, Friday. All we can say right now is later this week. On the Gemini 8 spacecraft, it departed Naha, Okinawa on March 19th at 9.03 p.m. Central Standard Time for Midway. At 3.23 p.m. CST on March 20th, the aircraft departed Midway for Travis Air Force Base and is scheduled to arrive there at 5.15 CST today. The aircraft is scheduled to depart from Travis at 7.30 p.m. tonight and arrive in St. Louis March 22nd at some time tomorrow morning. The spacecraft will be available for pictures on the apron at McDonnell, on the McDonnell side of Lambert Field. On the Gemini 8 Agena part of the mission itself, the latest reports on the Agena from the Texas tracking station at Corpus Christi indicate that all systems are working normally. This report was made at noon today. A flight control team from the Mission Control Center here began supporting the Agena target vehicle at the Texas station after support was terminated at the Mission Control Center. The Texas station is the only manned spaceflight tracking station in the WorldNet presently tracking, receiving data, and controlling the Agena. This operation is expected to continue until the Agena electrical power systems reach depletion. The last fix on the Agena from the Mission Control Center before control switched to Corpus Christi indicated an orbit of 220.6 by 219.8 nautical miles. The final engine burn with the Agena was performed in a retrograde attitude, and to conserve attitude control gas, the vehicle was left in that position with the engine forward and the target docking adapter aft. At noon today, about 80 hours of electrical power was left aboard the Agena, and the attitude control system gauge indicated 6 pounds of fuel remaining. Accuracy of the attitude control system fuel gauge at this level is not certain, and there could be more or somewhat less fuel remaining. Earlier today, the flight controllers for Agena at the Texas station changed the attitude control system mode from a loose one to a tight control mode to be sure that all ACS fuel was used prior to depletion of electrical power. In the tight control mode, the ACS holds the Agena within 1/4 degree deadband limits in all three axes. When all the attitude control system fuel is depleted, the Agena will probably start a slow tumble in the pitch axis and tumble about that axis. Flight controllers at the Texas station will be running command and communication systems tests until depletion of electrical power on Agena. This consists of turning on and off equipment, sending different command loads, and watching them execute, checking how well the memory and clock on board is working, and determining how much electrical current is required to perform these various operations. All the beacons, the C, the S, and the L band, and telemetry on Agena are operating continuously, and the worldwide network stations are tracking the now precisely defined orbit. From this precise Agena orbit, the ground tracking stations can locate their precise position on the ground in relation to other land masses on Earth. One additional note, the reconfiguration of the Mission Control Center for Gemini 9 will begin later this week. I don't believe it's very extensive. We had a small accident this morning at Ellington. A Mr. Harry McDonald with a Brown and Root / Northrop contractor combination was working with a crew at Ellington Air Force Base cleaning out a large tank outside Building 135. He got into an oxygen-deficient atmosphere and became dizzy and lightheaded. He was taken to the Ellington dispensary to ensure that it was an oxygen deficiency, and after an examination was given a clean bill of health by the dispensary personnel and sent back to work. The tank is one that was obtained some time back from an Air Force installation for use by NASA. In cleaning the tank, a nitrogen purge had been put on the tank to remove moisture because the tank had been open on top and on the ends. In ventilating the tank, the workman had failed to ventilate it completely, explaining the oxygen deficiency. In the travel department this week, Dr. Gilruth is to go to Washington yet today. He'll be there tomorrow, along with George Lowe, for a manned spaceflight program review. Both Dr. Gilruth and Mr. Lowe expect to be in Houston Wednesday through Friday. Mr. Purser will be here all week. Dr. Berry will be, he's here today. He will be in Los Angeles tomorrow at a AMA committee meeting, the Aerospace Medical Committee of the AMA meeting in L.A. Wednesday you'll be here, Thursday in Washington, and here back here on Friday. Mr. Yarnovic is here all week. Mr. Vigier will attend the program review in Washington tomorrow. He's here the rest of the week. Mr. Kraft will also attend the program review tomorrow. Mr. Slayton will be here all week with the exception of Thursday when he will be in Washington. Dr. Shea is shown here all week, but I believe that's an error. I think he plans to return to Downey, where he's been spending most of his time the last few weeks. Mr. Matthews scheduled here all week. The astronaut travel department Today, Monday, Scott Carpenter at the International Convention of the IEEE in New York. Conrad and Gordon on leave. The Gemini 9 and 10 crews at St. Louis on the rendezvous simulator. Today, Cunningham and Joe Kerwin at Dayton. Bill Anders at Worcester, Mass. For a suit fitting, David Clark Company. Tuesday, Carpenter still at the convention in New York. Conrad and Gordon, I know, plan to be with the follow-on crew debriefings here. And Cunningham and Kerwin remaining in Dayton. Wednesday, Carpenter to the Underwater Physiology Symposium and visit to Dahlgren Naval Weapons Station in the Washington, D.C. area. Anders, Conrad, and Gordon on leave. Gene Cernan and Tom Stafford at the Cape for their Plan X on Gemini 9. The Gemini 10 crew to St. Louis. Cunningham and Kerwin is still in Dayton. Kurt Michael to Washington, D.C. for a briefing in NASA headquarters. Gus Grissom, the first manned Apollo crew to Downey. This is Wednesday. Thursday, Scott Carpenter in Washington, D.C., Anders, Conrad and Gordon on leave, the GT-9 and 10 crews in St. Louis, Joe Kerwin still in Dayton, and the first Apollo crew in Downey. Friday, Carpenter in Washington, Frank Borman to the 4th Annual Air Force Association Honors Night Program in Dallas. Conrad and Gordon on leave. Bill Anders to Los Angeles at North American, working on the Apollo ECS breadboard system. The Gemini 9 and 10 crews in St. Louis, and the Apollo crew in Downey. On Saturday the 26th, Scott Carpenter will be in Boston at a Boston Sea Rovers 12th Annual Skin Diving Clinic. Frank Borman will be at a JC Rodeo in Phoenix, Arizona. And Buzz Aldrin and Gene Cernan will be in Dallas at Ling Temco Vought working with the MMU. We have visitors this week. We have approximately half a dozen representatives from the Italian Air Force Flight Test Center visiting us today. Also, a group from Minneapolis Honeywell, a group of executives and their wives, another group of citizens from Calgary, Alberta. A group of IBM management executives are here today. On the 22nd, a contingent from Ruston, Louisiana, Air Force ROTC cadets. And also on the 22nd, International Navy Group, Foreign Officers Command Course in the Naval War College, Newport, Rhode Island. On the 23rd, we have 5 representatives from the Korean National Assembly. We'll tour the center. On the 24th, a group from Kent State University in Kent, Ohio, Air Force ROTC cadets. Fine school. Also, a group from the Houston Independent School District junior high schools will be here on the 24th. On the 25th, foreign graduate law students from Southern Methodist University. And an Air Force ROTC group, Detachment 810 from Baylor, will be here on the 25th, along with the Honorable Clyde Doyle, the mayor of Pasadena. All right, now we have available for showing the what we call the quick look film on the Gemini 8 flight. And we do not have release prints on the quick look. We don't have release prints yet on the quick look film. I think you will have seen it all, except I believe the film runs about 13 minutes. The part that you would probably be principally interested in is the recovery film, which I don't think any of us have seen. Well, let me talk to you about that, Mo.